This podcast is presented by Brave Voice Films.
Frames of Reference.
Three films, two cinephiles, one podcast.
Cinema is my secret passion.
It's a foreign movie. A film is what it is.
But art films make people feel funny.
Yep, we only show first-run art films here.
We're getting too many mainstream movies.
Episode Zero.
One where we try to figure out what we're doing. Hey, welcome to our preview episode. I'm Kyle Mahaney. I'm a filmmaker and film editor. And with me is...
That's me. I'm Matthew Bonanno.
Yeah, that's you. That's your cue.
Yeah, I'm Matthew Bonanno. I'm a scientist and engineer. And then in my spare time, I also watch and make films.
Yeah.
No, it's a lot easier and faster just to watch the films than to make them. I have a collection of just hundreds of Blu-rays that I'm still working through.
Yeah. So the format for what we're doing.
So the way I've been thinking about it is we want to make a show that makes art film and cinema in general more accessible for people.
And less pretentious.
Yeah. And less pretentious than the usual, which is.
Very.
You know, this isn't for you if you watch Marvel movies. We want to distill watching films down to the same language that we have for reading books or looking at paintings, which is being able to understand, like, what are the culture in which films come out?
Yep.
And what are the films themselves saying?
And also, like, what are they building off? I think that's one of the big things that gets lost is...
Yes.
Even, like, your... What was it I saw? Oh, what's her name from Gilmore Girls?
Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy's new film. It's terrible. Don't go see it.
What film is it?
It's produced by her husband, and it's she's going back to college with her... It's the extremely goofy movie plot, but with a bunch of sex jokes.
I love...
Like, as, like, an adult raunchy comedy.
Melissa McCarthy has such a good grasp on comedic timing and delivery.
Oh, she does, and that's the only
and
thing
then
that makes
she
it
she and her
it.
Husband make these movies that aren't good and don't even play on the strengths of her.
Yeah, and, like, she's fine in it, but everything else is god-awful.
Right.
Don't go see it. I don't even remember what it's called, and I saw it 2 weeks ago.
This is it. This is our first non-endorsement. Do not see that movie.
We'll have a lot of those. We are unapologetically snobs.
You know, but that's also what I want to try to take apart a little bit, is the fact that you don't have to be a total snob.
I watched The Princess Diaries yesterday and enjoyed myself. Is that a hugely problematic film that has a horrible anti-feminist message and some really big plot issues? Yes.
Is it fun? And sure. I heard that Kyle watched The Princess Diaries and I judged him for it. Am I right to do that? I would say yes, I am.
No, but it's 9 o'clock in the morning. I was a little hungover and it was on Netflix. What are you saying?
You don't watch it.
Julie Andrews is a British treasure.
Oh my God. She's an international treasure, I say.
Yes.
But that's the thing, is that watching films doesn't have to be pretentious just because it's in a different language. It doesn't have to be inaccessible for people. Chantal Ackerman, Jean-Luc Godard, a lot of these people, they saw films as the language with which they spoke. And I think it'd be really great to just, like, make that more accessible to people.
And while you're dropping the Godard quotes, the name of that film that you should not see was Life of the Party. I forgot it that fast.
Ugh.
But also, like, so I went to film school.
I didn't.
And it was, that's okay. It's highly overrated. But one thing that's really interesting is, you know, you have these film history classes and they're very America focused.
Mm.
You watch all these old Hollywood films, and we barely talked about the French New Wave. We barely talked about the new German cinema. And that's really interesting, because I think a lot of filmmakers, you know, understanding film is understanding the building blocks in which things are built from.
Yeah, and also just understanding the radical roots of cinema in a lot of ways. Like, understanding that cinema has been used for anti-war movements and for...
Yes.
You know, radical ideas of you know, anti-racism or anti-sexism movements, where there wasn't it was easier to put that into a cinematic language than it was to put it into a verbal language and communicate it. And I think that's, like, really important for seeing how humans use art to push ourselves further.
And also, like, in film school, a lot of my peers loved Quentin Tarantino, but a lot of them hadn't seen any blaxploitation cinema.
Right.
Like, that's something that blows my mind. How do you not
Or they might not even
understand.
Have seen, yeah, they might have just seen from. Like a handful of westerns or the most famous samurai
yeah,
movies.
The Searchers, and you don't under. Yeah,
yeah, and I mean,
like,
you know.
Everyone knows the big, you know, dramatic scenes. Well, everyone who's studying film, dear God, I hope. knows, you know, everyone knows the three shots in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah, you know,
but you might not know what was going on in Europe as they were trying to emulate and build off of the American influence from the early John Wayne films.
Right. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where everybody knows the but they don't actually necessarily know where it's like from.
Even like, you know, Barry Jenkins had Moonlight, which won the Academy Award for 2 years ago. This fantastic, you know, naturalist realism queer film that takes the entire industry by storm. You know, that's directly building off of the British realism movement with films like Kes and Ratcatcher, and on top of that, it's coming straight from the French New Wave.
Yeah.
With, you know, Ingmar Bergman and all the Swedish movements. This is all building blocks coming together to a greater thing.
Yeah, and it's wonderful that there are artists out there like Jenkins who are making this, like, accessible to people on a base level, but at the same time, it's always so great to point to the building blocks that make it. That was actually like when I watched The Sopranos and I realized, oh, this is Breaking Bad before Breaking Bad was a thing.
Yep.
And being able to trace those lineages and
The Sopranos straight up invented the modern episodic drama.
Oh yeah.
The Sopranos, TV Today, The West Wing,
The Wire,
and The Wire are like straight up institutions in how you direct an episodic drama. And like, you have great things like Hill Street Blues, but they're not that formula, that very cinematic formula.
Yeah, I mean, there's a quote I really like, and I can't remember who said it or exactly what it is, so it's not super useful as a quote. But the idea basically being like, The Sopranos taught people that you could take TV seriously as an art form. And I would really like to see more of that with cinema today. Even for like people, you know, if you go and watch a Steven Spielberg movie, on one hand, like, you're watching a movie that was made as a movie. That's what Steven Spielberg is really good at, is making these films that
make them feel cinematic and big.
Right, making them feel
well,
like
also Spielberg is at this point self-referential.
Right.
I mean, but he's also, you know, clearly influenced by Kurosawa. He's very clearly influenced by, you know, all these World War II films. You know, he has an established place that he's coming from. And it's really hard to watch, you know, Close Encounters and Jaws without understanding that. Like, it's not hard. It's very easy. But it's hard to fully appreciate what he's doing.
Yeah, it's a very important part of watching films like American Graffiti, Taxi Driver, The Godfather.
Yep.
And it's so important to see, oh, this is what the Hollywood, they didn't call them the film brats. They called them New Hollywood.
The film school brats.
The film school brats. Okay.
Yeah. First film school generation.
All right. You know, I'm thinking of the Brat Pack, which was like, Ben Affleck, et cetera, off of Dazed and Confused. Yeah. You know, right. But so the new Hollywood movement was this idea that for relatively, like, new and innovative in American cinema is we can watch movies, they can be a really good time, and they can also build off of these almost academic ideas of what film are historically, what films are historically.
I think that's very important. We should probably move on to actually explaining what the show is. Yeah, we're just a bunch of pretentious film snobs, and I'm really straightforward with that. Like,
you know, yeah. It's, like I said, it's okay to be pretentious about it. My hope is that even if I am pretentious about it, people can see what it is about films that makes me so excited.
Yeah. And the joy of finding something new.
Yeah. As an art form and as a socio-political movement.
Yeah.
Film has so much potential that I think is just wonderful to engage in.
So every other week, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about
three
movies.
No problems. Every other week. Hands down.
Consistently.
Yes. There's never going to be a break. We're gonna try to take a newer film, a more current film, and two older films, maybe that are independent classics or artsy.
Or even just straight up classics, like even not that old, like just things that are, you know, you can draw a tie to see where something came from.
Right. And our goal is to connect modern films and old films both with each other.
Thematically, based on the movement, based on the artist. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can build off of and appreciate the differences.
And, yeah, and try to categorize film as an artistic movement which builds upon itself rather than a series of unrelated, you know,
yeah,
cinematic projects which come out.
Like, this week we're talking about three films. We're talking about the incredible new work by Lynn Ramsey, You Were Never Really Here, which I saw at Cannes last year. And it really shocks me they didn't try to squeeze that in for an Oscar award season release last year.
Mm-hmm. So I feel that, and at the same time, I also understand why not. And I think it's because Ramsey is a little hard to nail down.
She doesn't do what anyone wants. We'll talk about that more when we actually talk about the film.
Yeah, when we actually get there.
It's a really interesting film. I think it is going to enter into awards discussion this year.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not the Oscars, because the Oscars is a bunch of... Mm.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Ramsey is not necessarily the best fit for the Oscars.
But I think this will definitely be a film that's in awards discussion at the end of the year.
That would be great. I definitely think it deserves it.
You know, at least from like LACFA or something like that.
The other films we're talking about are Ratcatcher, which is also by Lynn Ramsey, but is a couple of decades older.
Yeah, 1999. It was her first film, following a couple short films.
And it's a very distinctly directed film. It's got such a self-assured voice for a debut project. It's nuts.
Lynn Ramsey's very interesting. She doesn't direct many films. This is only her fourth feature film.
But the film she does direct
in 2 decades, and they're all amazing.
Yeah, they're not. It's not the films that she does direct aren't. They're not identifiable because of a particular tick, but they are so thematically consistent.
Yep.
In their exploration of ideas of grief, of growth.
The human condition, really.
Yeah. And yeah, fundamentally, yes, the human condition is definitely something that she is interested in.
In a very, very natural way. Mm-hmm. She really has her finger on the pulse of the struggles of humanity, especially the working class.
Well, and who I think it was Tilda Swinton for We Need to Talk About Kevin. She was saying, like, if Lynn Ramsey weren't out here making movies, these movies would not be made, which is, you know, a little bit of a tautology. But the point being, she has this distinct voice that's almost impressive because of how self-assured, but also just how non-imposing it is. She has this hyper-realist slash supernatural kind of feel to her movies where they exist in the realm of reality, and then they have a little bit where they stretch themselves outwards, and that's where you really start to dive into the oddities of human relationships and being.
Yeah. And then our third film is moving thematically from kind of the coming of age and struggling with some really difficult circumstances in childhood themes that Ratcatcher deals with. We go explore one of Lynn Ramsey's favorite films, which is The 400 Blows by Francois Truffaut, mm-hmm. which is... gorgeous. Which is,
I mean, widely regarded as, yeah, one of the...
one of those films that changed everything when it came out.
Yeah, one of
part of the movement that it came out with.
One of the greatest coming-of-age films of all time, if not,
and it broke all the rules for storytelling.
Yeah.
So that's going to be an interesting spot to go.
Yeah.
So that's our basic format, you know, three films. We might not be super strict with, you know, they might not always be old. They might not always be new. We might just go topically and see what's interesting at the time we record.
Yeah, it's a very flexible, the learning language of film is super flexible, particularly it's accelerated over the past 3 years.
So much is going on right now, and there's so much independent cinema.
Right.
That, first of all, isn't being seen.
Yeah. There's just so much.
It's interesting because the bar to release a film is lower than it's ever been, but the ability to have your film seen.
Well, I mean, I think those two are directly correlated, honestly. It's just the reality that we live in such a glut of content, which isn't a bad thing, but the reality is as a result of that glut,
there's a lot of noise.
There's just so much stuff, yeah, and that if you really want to try to get through it and parse it, let alone try to understand how they all interrelate, it's a lot of work to do that.
Yeah. And one thing is we're also going to try to focus on things that are accessible. I think a lot of problems with a lot of podcasts that talk about new independent cinema is they're usually by someone based in New York or LA. Which we're both reasonably close to New York, and we're both.
You know, I'm Philly, yeah. So
I'm basically the Poconos, where I commute into Manhattan regularly for work.
The cultural nexus of the nation, the Poconos.
Yes, yes. The mountains are very. There's a lot of art house, but no, like seriously, we're both in a position where we're very lucky. Not only are we commuting distance to New York, but we have theaters right by us that are usually one of the first spots a film expands to. I think that's a problem with a lot of these podcasts that do talk about new releases for art film is for many people, these films are not going to be available to them for several weeks or months. So we're going to try to focus on things that are at least about to be on video on demand services.
Right. For the new film. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the old films, you know, hopefully they are
good luck.
Well enough known that there's somewhere you can watch them.
We'll try to keep it mostly topical so that everything you see is accessible.
You know, that's the goal, is to make it easier to talk about films so that you don't have to leave it just up to pretentious people like us to do all of it.
Also, just finding something that's a little off the beaten path that you might enjoy and being able to connect that. Okay, so, you know, I like this film. You know, I went out and saw The Lady Bird last year, and it was something really unique that I hadn't seen before. Mm. Well, maybe I should go explore some mumblecore. You know?
Had you not watched mumblecore before Lady Bird?
Oh, I had, but I went with so I saw Lady Bird three different times in theaters. MoviePass. Yeah, I can't do that anymore.
I thought they brought it back after public outcry.
No, that you can't see a film multiple times anymore.
Oh, okay.
But so I saw it with three different people, and none of them had really seen much in the way of mumblecore.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and that's like I think that's an experience that a lot of people have had.
Sure.
You know, I saw this really cool film. How do I find more like it?
Yeah. So we plan to release our first episode on Monday, July 16th, and that'll deal with the films Ratcatcher, You Were Never Really Here, and The 400 Blows, and exploring the links of coming of age between those films.
And also realism, I think. And the evolution of, especially British realism, the evolution of British realism into a more stylized form today where you can still see those roots. I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's about it. Frames of Reference is produced by Brave Voice Films. We'll be releasing our first full episode on Monday. I'm Kyle.
I'm Matthew.
And have a good night.
Eat
out.